Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Pleasure to see everybody. And it's a pleasure to welcome Avi Siegel making his inaugural debut, on Torah in Motion. You know, when you're at a certain age, so you know, how far back do you go on a resume? So when you're, you know, in your early 20s, so I think we can mention he went to SAR High School, then he learned in Yeshivat Haaretzion. He just graduated from Princeton with a degree in philosophy, summa cum laude, if I pronounced that correctly. And he will be going this year, he'll be going to do a degree in political thought and intellectual history at University of Cambridge. So it's a pleasure to welcome Avi Siegel. And as they say, you know, in Avrech, that's Av b'chachma v'rach b'shanim, elderly in wisdom, but young in years. So we look forward to learning with you. And Bakasha, it's all yours.
All right. Well, I can certainly confirm the Rach v'Shanim, and I guess we'll find out what the story is with regard to Chochmah this evening. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with everyone to learn with you a bit tonight. The topic tonight is what on earth is going on in Parshas Ekev with regard to the status of the Jewish people as a chosen. Is it a status that suggests to what will occur eventually to them in the future, or is it something else? Is it something that that indicates something about how they ought to act in order for certain things to happen, but perhaps it's not a prophecy, it's not necessary. So that will all have seemed rather abstract, obscure, but we will begin by chewing on the sources in question. So the sources have been posted. I'm going to move through them on my own screen separately. So I'll ask that you take a look over there at the sources if you'd like to follow along inside. This will be fairly text heavy, but I'll be sure to explain everything. You'll see it's a lot of Hebrew, but everything will be explained in English also. So the way I want to begin tonight is to start chewing on a bunch of interesting psukim from Parshas Ekev. And once you've looked at Ekev, we're going to also take a look at some surrounding psukim in Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is in large part the final speech that Moshe gives to the Jewish people. And so I think it's particularly important because this is one oration, one speech for us to consider the larger context and not just look at Parshas Ekev. Although again, I'm going to begin by picking up on some themes in Parshas Ekev and also perhaps. So let's just, okay, so this is the very first source on page one of the source sheet. It will likely be a familiar pasuk. And it goes like this: V'haya ekev tishmaun es hamishpatim ha'ela u'shmartem ba'asisem osam v'shamar Adonai Elohecha l'cha es havaris v'asa chesed asher nishba la'avosecha. So it will be ekev is an interesting word, but you know we'll translate it here as if or as a consequence of. Okay, so it will be if you listen to the ordinances that God has laid out. You heed them and you act in accordance with them. So then the result will be that God, your God, will observe on your behalf the berit and chesed, the covenant and the kindness that He promised to your fathers. Okay, so already here we have the following setup. There's something that the Jewish people have to do, and there's something that God will do as a result. If the Jewish people listen to God's commandments, then the result will be that God is going to adhere to the brit and chesed, right, the covenant and kindness that He promised to your forefathers. And what will that consist of? Next pasuk. Va'hevecha ubrachacha v'yirbecha ubirach pri v'yitznacha ufriyad ma'asecha deganacha v'sirashcha v'yitzarecha shigar alafecha v'yashteros tzonecha al ha'adama asher nishpa lavosecha la'ases lach. Okay, so then God will love you, and that will be manifest in the flourishing of the land. You will flourish, you will thrive on the land that God promised to your forefathers to give to you. So when we spoke about in that first pasuk there about the brit and chesed, right, this covenant, treaty covenant, evidently we were speaking about a promise, and the promise is God's promise that this land, right, the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan, will be given to you. Okay, so that's our setup. Evidently, we see that there's a special relationship that the Jewish people have. That's baked into their history. There is a promise. This will be familiar to us. There's a promise of a land. And that's something that they have access to. Now, moving on a bit in Parshas Ekev, and this brings us to the next paragraph here on page one. We read, and I won't read this. I won't read everything inside here. But the point here that we see is God is recounting. Moshe is telling the Jewish people to recall this whole process, this whole journey that they went through, that where God was molich them in the desert, and we're told why did God do that. So that's Parak Chet Pasuk Hey, the last pasuk in that small paragraph. V'yadata im levavecha ki kasher yaser ishas beno Adonai Elohecha miyasereka. Just as a man admonishes, teaches his son, God does the same thing. So again, there's this close, very intimate relationship between God and the Jewish people. Now, to flesh this out more, to understand better what's going on, let's look at yet another pasuk, but let's move back actually to the very beginning of Sefer Dvarim. So this now is the third paragraph on page one. And here we read as follows. Re'eh nasati lifnechem es ta'aretz. See, I have given before you the land. Bo urshuas aretz asher nishba Adonai l'avosichem le'Avraham le'Yitzchak le'Yaakov l'aseis lahem ulzaram achareihem. Okay, come and inherit the land that God promised to your forefathers, to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, to give to them and to their offspring. Okay, so again, this brit, which comes with the promise of the land, is something that we're now seeing as something that recurs in Sefer Devarim. It goes along with a special intimate relationship with God. Okay, what is the nature of this brit? What is the nature of this promise? How does it work? So I want to get more of a sense of that. Let's look together at Perek Dalet Pasuk Lamed Zayin. So again, we're moving around in Sefer Dvarim, and I want to show you the following sukim. So the fourth paragraph on page one of the source sheet. V'sachas ki ahav es avusacha, v'yivchar b'zaroa achara, v'yotziacha b'fanav, b'chocho agadol mimisrayim, lehorish goyim dolim v'atmim mimecha mipanecha, laviacha l'asas lecha es artzam nachalak hayom hazeh. Okay, God, well, Moshe, I keep saying God, but it's Moshe, pardon me. Moshe here is telling the Jewish people, look, God loved your forefathers, right? He ahav es avosecha, and as a result, vayivchar, he chose your forefathers' offspring, right, following them. And then he brought them out of Egypt, and we go on, right? Then they went on to inherit the land of Israel from the nations who were inhabiting the land, and then to give them this land as an inheritance, as a nachala. Okay? So, great. What is the nature of this brit? What is the nature of this covenant of the promise? Well, it's the promise of the land. It's a covenant between God and the people. And crucially, it was made because God loved the Avot. God loved the forefathers, and therefore he promised the land to them. So love is a crucial factor here. There's a special status that this people obtain as a result. And the brit seems to come from that. And for a astounding articulation of this special status, of the special chosen status of the Jewish people, we should look together at Perek Zayin in Sefer Dvarim. So now moving to the next paragraph, okay? So this is the last paragraph in our little thesis section. And let me just read this to all of us. Ki am kadosh atzal Adonai Elohecha, becha bachar Adonai Elohecha, lios lo le'am segula mikol ha'amim asher al pnei adama. For you are a holy nation to God, God chose you to be for him a Am Segula, okay, perhaps a treasured nation, we could translate that, okay, more than all the other, or from among all of the other nations that are on the earth. And we go on. It wasn't because you are so great relative to the other nations that God was chashak, right? It's such an interesting word that God fell for the Jewish people, that God fell in love with you. No, you're very few. It's not about how great you are. Rather, he. No, rather it's because of God's love for you and God's preserving, God's upholding of this promise that he promised to your forefathers. That's why he brought you out of Egypt. And then the final pasuk here, V'yadatav, Ki'adnai lechu v'alohim ha'el ha'man, shomer ha'bris v'achesed li'o'avav u'shomrei mitzvosav l'eleftor. Okay, and you shall know that God is the Lord. God is the God who is shomer ha'bris v'achesed, who upholds, who continues to act in accordance with that brit and chesed, that covenant, that promise, that great kindness. Okay, so there are a bunch of pieces there. So put that together, I'd like to say the following. The sense that we seem to be getting from these various psukim and others that we could have cited is that there is a special promise that was made to the Jewish people by God. That promise is the promise of a land. The promise comes in the form of a brit, of a covenant. And crucially, this promise seems like it was made to the Jewish people because they are special, they are kadosh. But why are they kadosh? Well, God fell in love with them. God loved the Avot, and that love then spilled towards the rest of the people, right? Towards that love was then bestowed on the offspring of the Avot. All right. So here's what's interesting, and this will then propel us forward. It seems like we are getting here a promise that is, again, based on a special love, special status, and it's therefore hard to see how things could go in any other direction. So, yes, we were told at the beginning of the Parsha, and this is going to be important for us, right, v'haya ekev tishmon, right, that this will happen if, right, as a consequence of your listening to God's commandments, but also there's this very clear sense that this is a chosen nation, that this is a nation that God loves, that God wants to fulfill a promise to. So it really does seem, when you focus on those psukim about the special chosen status of this people, that this is going to happen, right? That there's that we're in the realm of prophecy, if you will. Okay. God loved the Jewish people. God promises the land. They're going to get it. And the behavior of the nation seems like it's not so relevant. At least one could think such a thing. Now, that is not an assumption that seems like it holds once you look more around Sefer Dvarim. And so together, I want to now move into the antithesis piece of the introductory portion here. And let's look at some excerpts from Sefer Dvarim that push in what seems like the other direction. Okay, so now we're at the bottom of the first page of sources, and we will read the following from Parshas Ekev. Hishamar lecha pen tishkach es Adonai Elohecha, levilti shemor mitzvosav u'mishpatav u'chukosav asher anochi mitzavecha hayom. Okay, be very careful lest you forget God and you do not adhere to God's commands. And you say in your heart, "Ah, all these great things that that I've attained, that's been through my own handiwork." Now you have to realize that any great things that you've attained, that is through God, who has been giving you the strength, in order that God should then uphold his covenant, right? The brit, the treaty that he promised to the Avot. Okay, so we're seeing, again, right, the notion of the bris is crucial, that, right, that this covenant is something that is structuring how we're thinking about the whole, the place of the Jewish people here in general, but particularly it is affecting how we are supposed to think about good things that occur. It's okay, it happens, but again, it happens, or the brit will be upheld, it seems from here, under the assumption that the Jewish people don't forget, right, that there is a vizaharta rather than a pentishkach. And this is brought out in the following psukim. V'haya im shachach tishkach esad ma'elavacha v'yalachta charei alim achirim v'abatam v'ishtachavisa lahem ha'idosi v'achem ayom ki avod tovi dun. Okay, and so we say here simply, if you forget God and you follow other gods and you don't adhere to God's laws but rather to the laws of foreign nations, well, avod tovi dun, you will surely be destroyed. Kagoyim asher adonai ma'avid mipneichem kein tovi dun. Just like the nations that are being destroyed to make way for Bnei Yisrael, so too you shall be destroyed because you did not listen. So we began the parsha with Ekev, right? V'haya Ekev Tishmeun, but there's also an Ekev Lo Tishmeun. Ekev Lo Tishmeun suggests that the brit can just go out the window. It can just disappear. The brit, We see here, right, that this covenant, this promise that was made to the Jewish people appears all of a sudden profoundly contingent. There's no talk here about the special status of the Jewish people. There's no talk about God choosing them or loving their forefathers so much. If you don't follow what God tells you to do, then you will go the same way that the Canaanim and the Amorim, et cetera, went. You will be destroyed. And we can see a whole bunch of other places in Sefer Dvarim where very similar notion is put forward. So let's just spend a little bit of time together exploring some of those. Now we're on page 2 of the source sheet at the top. And here we have, just like we had before, a warning that if there's a chayil, if there's some great attainment that is attained, that one should not, should not say that was through my own doing. So similarly, we see in Perek Tes of Sefer Dvarim, we're here on the second line of page 2. Lo v'tzidkascha u'v'yosha levavcha tava l'reshes es artzam. You're not inheriting the land of the nations that were in this land before because you're so, so righteous, or because your heart is so honest. No, rather, again, reiterating, this is, the reason why you're going into this land is not because of any tzedakah of yours, not because of righteousness on your part. No, it's connect people. And then Moshe goes on and he lists different occasions when the people manifested this characteristic of being an Am Kishei Orech, of being a stiff-necked people, number of times when the Bnei Yisrael really, really irked God and irked Moshe. There's this amazing line that Moshe ends up saying in Tes Pasuk Chaf Dalet. This is the end of the first paragraph on page 2. Mamrim heisam im Adonam yom dati aschem. You have been rebellious with God from the very day that I knew you. So the Jewish people aren't so special, it would seem. This doesn't seem like a nation that's so terribly worthy of love. It sounds like a nation that has an opportunity to do a good thing. And yeah, God did make a promise, but also it seems like it's incredibly contingent on their good behavior. And indeed, this is a nation that's an Am Kshei Oref, so they're stiff-necked. So perhaps we have reason to think that actually it's not going to work out so well. Mamrim heisam im Adonai miyom dati aschem. So in continuing to explore this way of thinking about the chosen status of the people, or the perhaps the unchosen status. That's how it almost starts to seem for in moments like these in Sefer Dvarim. So a passage here that I imagine will be familiar to more or less everyone, from the second paragraph of the Shema, which also appears in our Parsha. This now is the second paragraph, also on page 2. Okay, if you listen to my commands, God says, then all kinds of good things will happen. That's great. And you'll be on the land that I promised to your forefathers. But if you don't, if you stray, then you will surely be eradicated from this land. Yes, you know, God gave it to you, or is giving it to you, is in the process of giving it to you. But if you don't adhere to the commandments, it's going to go away. You're going to lose it. And that is precisely the relationship that we read in Tefillah, quite frequently whenever we say the Shema. And it's also right here in our Parsha. Okay. And there's certainly no mention here about, you know, because you are an Am Kadosh, you know, there's a relationship of chesed that we're dealing with here. No, if you follow the commandments, it's going to be good. If you don't follow the commandments, it's not going to be good. And very similar notion we see again in Parak Zion. I won't take us there. I'll only note, and this is again still on page 2, the third paragraph on page 2. Here we're told that once again, if you follow foreign gods, God will get very angry and will very quickly eradicate your place in the land. But then, right after that said, so in Perek Zayin Fasuk Dalad, we have Kiasir Aspincham Yacharayev Yavdoli Machirim V'chara Afad Naibachem V'shmid Chamaher. Right? If your offspring stop following commands, you know, you will this same sukkim that I read before, Kiam Kadoshata, right? You're an Am Kadosh, you're a holy nation, you were chosen, God loved you so much. It wasn't because you were so plentiful, so numerous, rather it was just because of God's love for you and God preserving the Shua. And there's something incongruous here. If you take some more time and read over there, it doesn't fit easily. So one then has to ask, okay, so you're an Am Kadosh, so it sounds like that is somehow a reason to think that God would, would remove you from the land if you don't act properly. And here you're probably thinking, this is Avi. It's not so complicated. An Am Kadosh means that they're a nation that are called to holiness, that they, right, they're chosen for a great task. If his people don't live up to the task, then they haven't done what they're supposed to do, and they lose that status. And very well, it might be that's something that we should enter. But I want to stress again that if the people are chosen, if they're holy, if they have a great destiny, it becomes very difficult to understand how they could simply be removed from the land and that could all just go away. What happened to this extra quality that it seemed like they had as a result of this brit, as a result of this great ahava that God had for them? And so the same theme recurs in Sefer Devarim. I won't read every instance here, but right, a lot of warnings lest you forget the brit. So we'll move together now to page 3. And I want to, just before we move on and try to start making some more sense together of what's going on here, let's read the following passage. So we're in the second full paragraph on page 3 of the source sheet, Perek Bet of Sefer Dvarim, Pasuk Dalet. V'asa'am tzav lemor, atem ovrim b'gvul achichem b'nei sav hayushvim b'seir, v'yiru mikem v'nishmartem me'od. So what's going on is that the children of Israel are they're wandering in the desert. They're not yet in the land of Israel proper. They're now approaching the children of Esav. And God says as follows to the Jews as guidance. Al tisgaruvam ki lo etein lachem yaratzam ad midrach kaf regel ki Yerushal Esav nasati es har seir. Okay, don't become aggressive with the children of Esav, is what the children of Israel are told. Because I will not give you any of their land, not even a foot print, because I have given Har Seir, Mount Seir, this portion of land, as a Yerusha to Esav, as an inheritance to Esav. And we read on, and the very similar thing occurs with regard to Ammon and Moab, right? That the Jews are told, sorry, that's not your land. That was actually an inheritance that God gave to other people, to Bnei Lot. And that's the story there. So I bring that because I want to use that to stress a notion that already the Psukim were bringing before us. Namely, the Jews seem like they're just one other nation that are given a portion, that are given a nachala, and if they do the right thing and they act correctly, then they can stay there and they'll thrive. But if they don't, then they'll go. So a passage like this in Sefer Dvarim seems, at least at face value, to undermine any particular unique quality that the Jewish people have. No, they've been given a land just like the other great nations have been given lands, and if you act correctly, you will thrive as a result. If you don't, then you won't. Okay. That was just a lot of psukim that we just chewed on together. I would suggest to you that there's at least an apparent tension that we just looked at. On the one hand, it seems like the Jewish people are a chosen nation. They're an Am HaNivchar, an Am Kadosh. They have a special brit that was made between them and God. They have a special promise, and they have this great destiny before them. On the other hand, the fate of the Jewish people is so incredibly tied to how they behave. If they do the right thing, if they follow God's mitzvot, great, fine, you'll stay in the land. If you don't, you're gone, you're out. And it seems like there's at least something of a problem there, because you would think, once again, that chosenness and the status of being loved by God would mean that your status, that your claim to the land that God has promised and right the covenant that you're a part of would not be so flimsy, so contingent. It would seem that there would be something more robust. And in fact, some have been tempted to say, perhaps actually the whole business about Am Kadosh and Am HaNivchar is overrated. You know, yes, that's, you know, we can read that, we can read that in context as needed. Maybe it's just saying that you have a special task, special mission, but there's no unique quality that means that the Jewish people are more likely to stay in the land than any other if they don't act properly. It's all just about, you know, good behavior and proper behavior. So probably the most famous proponent of that view is Spinoza. You'll forgive me for including in the Shir, but I think he illustrates the point very well. And this is a view that we should think about. And then throughout the Shir, we're going to be trying to show why, although this is an interesting view, I think it's at least not a view that is the most faithful to the psukim that we have. But Spinoza says as follows, page 3, the English source right there. God did not choose the Hebrews to eternity, but only on the same condition on which he previously chose the Canaanites. God did not choose the Hebrew nation unconditionally, nor to eternity. So if the prophets predicted a new and eternal covenant of the knowledge, love, and grace of God, and so there he's referring to the language of Brit and similar language which does occur in the Nevi'im fairly frequently, and he has to explain that given his view. He says, it is easily proven that this was promised only to the pious. That's just for the tzaddikim. That's a special breed for the tzaddikim, but not for Bnei Yisrael, not for the Hebrew nation. This different breed for the tzaddikim, this eternal covenant of the knowledge and love of God is universal. But again, the covenant that was made between God and the Jewish people was conditional. It was not eternal. It was temporal, and it can go away. And Spinoza's claim is it did. You know, they were in the land, and as long as they were acting properly, things were working out. But after some time, they strayed and they lost it. And there goes the status of chosenness. So this is very tempting, at least on face value. It's a tempting view. And again, part of why it's so tempting is because of the different sources that we saw together, right? From the Shema, if you do the right thing, if you follow God's commandments, it'll be good. If you don't, you're out of the land. That's it. And, you know, the, again, the special love for this people, a special status of being chosen, doesn't seem like it's part of the picture. And yet, I think that we have been skipping over something. I think that we are missing something. Indeed, I think Spinoza misses something when he draws this conclusion. As I was trying to show before, you know, perhaps you think it was somewhat rough, but roughly we had our thesis, right? One side saying very special nation, special status, beloved by God. The Avot were so beloved, right? God was Hashak in these people. God has such a great Ahava for them. On the other hand, they're Amkshe Oref. You know, it's really, it seems like it's really this, that they're flourishing in the land is contingent. It's, you know, it's conditional and the like. So the question is, how do we make sense of this? And I want to suggest that the key to making sense of this, certainly on the terms of the Chumash, is this notion of Zchut Avot or Brit Avot. So we've seen a number of times together already tonight that there's this brief, this covenant that was made between God and the Avot, the forefathers. And that is something that's been following the Jewish people. It's right, that its content, as we saw, is a promise of a land. But something seems like it, something very significant seems like it's going on there. And let's see this in action. Okay, let's see this notion of Zchut Avot, of the merit of the forefathers, in action together in Sefer Dvarim. Let me show you rather than simply tell you. So when Moshe recounts in also in Parshas Ekev, what happened at Chet HaEgel with regard to the sin of the golden calf, shortly after the revelation at Sinai, he says as follows. We're now together at the bottom of page 3, trying to develop some kind of synthesis of the tension that we've developed. Moshe says as follows: Va'espalel el Adonai va'umar Adonai Elohim al tashches amcha v'nachlascha asher padisa begolecha asher utzisa mimitzrayim biyad chazaka. Okay, Moshe implores God, you know, do not destroy your nation, your inheritance. Zechor la'avadecha le'Avraham le'Yitzchak le'Yaakov al tifen el kishiyam azev v'arishol v'alchataso. Recall your servants, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Don't pay attention to the hardness, right? From right, the kshi, from kshei oref. It's right. It's certainly related of this nation. Don't pay attention to the particular qualities of the Jewish people right now. Yes, they're sinning right now. Yes, Chet HaEgel was not good, but recall the avot. And then Moshe makes the secondary argument, which we won't go into now. Saying no, also God, you should be concerned because the nations will see this and they'll say, oh, God wasn't able to do this, and basically it'll be a chil Hashem. But let's dive more into this notion here of zechor la'avadecha le'Avraham le'Yitzchak le'Yaakov. Moshe makes an argument to God and it works. The argument is, remember Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, whom you loved so much. Don't pay attention. Or at least don't make your decision based on the current wickedness of the Jewish people. And so once again, we have a mention of the promise of the Shua shortly afterwards when God replies to Moshe. He refers to Asher Nishbati Lavosama Seis Lahem at the bottom of page 3. But let's together look at what happens right afterwards. So now Moshe turns from recounting the story of Chet HaEgel and how he dealt with that. And here he says the following, top of page 4. Ve'ata Yisrael, ma Adonai Elohecha shoel me'imach, ki im li yiras Adonai Elohecha lalechas b'chol drachav ula'avoso, v'la'avod es Adonai Elohecha b'chol lalecha b'chol na'ashecha, lishmor es mitzvos Adonai v'yazchu kosav asher anochim etzavecha hayom, Letov lach. Now, O Israel, says Moshe, what does God? What does God ask of you? To fear God, to follow God's commandments. This is all what you ought to do. Moshe goes on. Hein l'Adonai Elohecha hashamayim u'shmei hashamayim ha'aretz v'chol asher ba. Look, he says Moshe, God is the God of everything, the God of the heavens, the God of the land, of everything in it. However, Parak Yud Pasuk Tet Vav, Rak Ba'avosecha Chashak Adonai Li'Avosam, Va'yivchar B'zaram Acharehem, Ba'chem Mikolamim Kayom Hazeh. And then we say as follows, Moshe says, Umaltem es orlas levavchem yorpechem lo sakshuod. So this is, I find this an incredibly interesting juxtaposition of psukim, and let me tell you why. So we read just now as follows. God, right, so Moshe says, despite the fact that God is the God of everything, it was only in your forefathers whom God fell, with your forefathers whom God fell in love and chose them and then chose their offspring from all of the nations. Okay, which sounds like, right, just it's just repeating an idea that we've seen together already. But then we have this line which seemingly comes out of nowhere, Umaltem es orlas levavchem yorpechem lo sakshuod. And you shall circumcise the foreskin of your hearts, and the, you know, your necks you shall not stiffen anymore. And this to me captures in part where we're going. Yes, there's a special love that God had for the Avot, which then got passed on to the children. However, that doesn't work by itself. Now, you might think that Chet HaEgel and what happened there and Moshe's you know, prayer, God, recall the Avot, recall the forefathers, that seems like that should work by itself. And it does work. It does, right? God says, fine, I won't destroy them. But also Moshe says, and there's a tension here in this very pasuk that I don't have an easy resolution to. Moshe says, you also, you Bnei Israel, either ought to or will, and this is the tension, it's hard to tell whether this is a prophecy or a prophylactic, right? You ought to or you shall basically fix your behavior and stop being so stiff-necked. Yes, it's worked that, you know, that, like I was, Moshe says, I was able at Chet HaEgel to say, you know, God recall the Avot. But yeah, and yes, God really loved the Avot. Yes, he did. But Moshe adds, either saying you will, or it's just saying, please stop doing this, right? Stop being so stiff-necked, fix your behavior. And this then leads us to the notion of Zchut Avot. You don't have to read this in the following way, but I think that we're going to see that there's a very strong strand that reads this in the following way. It works at Chet HaEgel to say, we sinned, but remember how much you, God, loved the forefathers? You really love them. They were really wonderful, and you made a promise to them, so don't destroy this people. It works there. But Moshe also seems to be hedging, because he has a strong sense that it won't always work. Rather, the Jewish people have to take their behavior into their own hands. They have to stop being an Am Kshei Oref. They won't get off easy always in the future. Ve'orpechem lo takshu od. Okay, and this is, so now we have we still have a lot to cover in terms of the nature of Zchut Avot, and we'll see how many sources we do get to look at together. But I want, with the psukim in this way explored, Let's now move on together. So if anyone would like on their own time to take a look at some of the background sources here that I gave with regard to the nature of the breach, right? This goes back to the breach in Abtarim that God made with Abraham, by all means. We'll skip a few sources. Let's go to the source from Vayikra at the bottom of page 4. And so this is from Parshas Bechukosai. From the Tokacha, where God, there's this long passage with regard to what will happen if the Jewish people do not follow the laws of God, and you know it's much worse, or it's much worse and more graphic and vivid than simply va'avatem mehira, you shall be destroyed. But what happens remarkably at the end of this whole series of what will happen, and you'll be dispersed in the nation and then exiled, and it's going to be absolutely terrible. But then in Vayikra Perek Chavav Pasuk Membet, we read as follows, V'zacharti es b'risi Yaakov, v'af es b'risi Yitzchak, v'af es b'risi Avraham eskor, v'ha'aretz eskor. God says, and I will remember my covenant with Yaakov, and also the covenant with Yitzchak, and also the covenant with Avraham, and I shall remember the land. And a similar locution in Pasuk Mem Dalid, Va'af Gam Zos Biosam Bi'aretz Oyveihem, and even when you were when they, the Jewish people, are in the land of their enemies, Lo Me'astim Logi Altim L'Chalosam L'Hafer B'Risitam Ki Ani Adonai Eloheihem. I will not reject them to annihilate them. I will not reject them such that I will annihilate them and be mefer briti and nullify my covenant with them because I am God, their God. Right? Rather, v'zacharti lahem b'ris rishonim, I shall remember the covenant from earlier times. And so this is very interesting because what we're seeing here is that the Brit does seem like it outlasts the exile of the Jewish people from the land. Yes, they can do the wrong thing. They can break their side of the bargain such that God doesn't have to uphold God's side of the bargain. And, you know, God kicked them out of the land because they stopped following the laws that they were supposed to follow under the terms of the Brit. But the Brit still remains, and it remains in the form of a Brit with the Avot. So the forefathers, again, right, this covenant that was made with them somehow seems like it endures. Now, we have here, it might seem like a kind of soup of different sukkim and different ideas. And to make some sense of this, we can turn to some sources from Chazal that are very interested in trying to make sense of the nature of this brit, where it came from, how long it should last, and the like. And so remarkably, in Vayikra Rabba, in the Midrash, we read about Zchut Avot, and not just read about it, that's not terribly remarkable, but we read that it actually may have expired. So we'll take a look at this together, and this will, as we'll see momentarily, that this appears in very similar form also in Masechet Shabbat, in the Gemara, in the Talmud. I'll note just before we read this together that the term Zchut Avot appears something like 100 times in the Midrash. This is just one. There are many, many others. I imagine that that in a different shir we could look at different views within the Midrash with regard to Zchut Avot and what it means, different ways that it's used. Right now, let's just focus on this particular famous Midrash, which is on the Psukim from Vayikra that we just read. And we read like this. Let's just start from the beginning together of this source. Okay, so we're under the heading "The End of Zchus Avot" in Vayikra Rabba on page 5. V'lama ne'amru avos achoranis? It's a nice question. The question is as follows. The question is: look, in Vayikra Perek Chafa Pasuk Membet, the avot were listed in the opposite order. It was v'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, v'af es brisi Yitzchak. Abraham is core, v'aretz is core. So why was it listed in that way? So the answer that is given here is this. Lomar, im ein ma'aseh b'Yaakov, kedai he ma'aseh Yitzchak, v'im ein ma'aseh Yitzchak, kedai he ma'aseh Abraham, kedai hu ma'aseh kol achad v'achad, sheitla kol ha'olam b'dino. Okay, what's the idea? The idea is we work backwards and we say, okay, we really need to appeal at this point to the merit of our forefathers. So let's start with Yaakov. Is there enough in the things that Yaakov did, in Ma'aseh Yaakov, to supply us with the merit that we need to endure and perhaps to return to the land? If so, great. If not, we go to the merit of Yitzchak. And then similarly, if it's adequate, great. If not, go back to the merit of Avraham. This is a nice illustration. First of all, I think it's a nice reading of the pasuk, but it's also a nice illustration of Zchut Avot in action, right? The idea that we would appeal to the merit of the forefathers, and that would actually have some kind of concrete effect in the here and now in order to get out of some sticky galistic situation. And why is the land mentioned? We can. That's interesting, but let's move on from that. And the following piece of this midrash is very important for our purposes. The midrash asks the following question: Ad matai zchut avot kayemet? Until when does the merit of the forefathers last? Is it going to be with us forever? The assumption baked into the question seems to be actually, it has to expire at some point. And this actually, although we won't get into this too much together tonight, but the notion that Zechut Avot has to expire is a notion that it works with a broader idea that's fairly common in the Gemara and in the different texts of Chazal, that merits that a person has, that their family has, are there to be drawn on, but they can be used up. They can expire. So, right. So like phrases like mimatin lo bizchuyosav, that if, for instance, if a person goes into a dangerous situation, so it could be that they'll be rescued by dint of their merits, but then they'll have fewer merits afterwards. So the idea that merits are something that are quantifiable and that can be used up is something that is already floating around. And so this question in that context makes a great deal of sense, that we would say, okay, so there is this chut avot. God really loved the avot. They did good things, but you know, until when can we keep drawing on that? At what point is it just up to us? And there are a bunch of answers then given. One answer is up until the time of Yehoahaz, but afterwards that was the end. Another answer is up until the time of Eliyahu, but that was the end. Another is up until the time of Hosea, or maybe up until the time of Chizkiah. Okay. Bunch of different possible answers given. We won't go into the psukim there. You can look yourself. But in each place, there's a close reading that's being done in order to say at this point the covenant no longer is enduring, or at least the special relationship with the avot is no longer going to save you. But let's look at the following two lines together at the end of this midrash. Rabbi Yudin b'Rabbi b'Shem Rabbi Barachia Amar. If you see that it seems like the merit of the forefathers and the foremothers has been diminished, has gone away, go and engage in good deeds. Okay? And this is interesting because the premise here seems to be that Zechut Avot can be used up, and you know, that comports with what we've seen until now, right? Maybe it lasted until Yehoahaz, maybe until Eliyahu, but it sounds like at some point it's going to go. So the question is, what do you do? And the answer that's given here is go and act rightly, go do the right thing, go do good deeds. So we'll see together that's a very venerable approach here. Zechut Avot is gone. It's no longer available, but you can have your own zechut, your own merit, if you only do good things and then come to deserve that. But that, you know, that takes your own initiative. But interestingly, Rav Acha rejects that. Amar Rav Acha, no, la'olam zechut avot kayemet. Zechut avot, says Rav Acha, stays with us forever. Always that's something, that merit of the forefathers is something that we can appeal to. So let's now look together at a bunch of sources that deal with the same question of, okay, so there is chut avot, this special, right, the special merit that, right, that is associated with the avot, with the forefathers. To what extent and for what period of time is it something that we can appeal to? And we just saw that there are a bunch of different answers that were given here. So this midrash appears in slightly different form in the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph. We're certainly not going to read the whole thing together. I wanted to just to give it to you so you would have it. But in short, the Gemara there starts talking about the idea of rebuke. And then in talking about rebuke, it references Yechezkel Perek Tes. And in Yechezkel Perek Tes, Yechezkel is told to go and put a tav, like the letter tav, the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet, on the foreheads of different people. Okay, we won't go into that. But the reason why we need to know that context is because the Gemara then asks, Maishna tav? Why specifically a tav? What's the symbolism of tav? Okay, and there are two answers given that are relevant for us. One answer is the answer of Shmuel. Okay, so we're at the bottom of page 5 together. Three lines from the bottom on page 5. Shmuel Amar, Tamas Chusavos. Shmuel says the symbolism of that taf that was placed on the foreheads of his people in Yechezkel Perek Tes is that Chusavos is used up. It's ended. There's no more of it. That's Shmuel's take here. And we saw that there was a version of that in Vayikaraba. I mean, that was the view of a whole bunch of different rabbis there, right? Maybe up until Yehoahaz, Eliyahu, and the like, but at some point it's gone. However, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, tachon zuchus avos, which is a hard word. The word tachon is tricky to translate, but essentially it seems to mean, no, zuchus avos gives favor. It continues to give favor. It still works. And so we have here, it seems like a very fundamental machlokas. You know, there's a lot rests on it, because it seems like, I mean, we might even say that the whole status of the Jewish people rests on this. Are we special, chosen? Do we have that connection to the Avot, and therefore the connection to God's love for us, which comes through the Avot? Do we have that? Is that still around, or has it been used up? And are we on our own? That is at least one way that someone could articulate the stakes of that machlokas. So then the Gemara goes on and repeats different views regarding the duration of Zechut Avot. But if in fact it was used up, it was used up. I will note as follows: the Gemara, right after it's asked, right, what's the symbolism of Tav, and it's given us, right, these different views. Among them, Shmuel's view that Zechut Avot was used up, and Rabbi Yochanan's view that Zechut Avot is still around and can still bestow favor. The Gemara then asks, Me'ema tai tama Zechut Avot? Asks, right, from when was Zechut Avot ended? When was it used up? And the fact that it asks that does strongly suggest that Shmuel might be the preferred view here, because the assumption of that question is that Zechut Avot was used up. And all of the different views that will then follow are views that say, yeah, it was around for some time, but it's gone. So that's important to retain, although note that, right, so it seems like the dominant view is Tama Zechut Avot, that Zechut Avot was used up, but there's this dissent of Rabbi Yochanan that, no, Tachon Zechut Avot. Okay, so moving on, we're in the middle of page 6 here. And I'm not surprisingly seeing that we're not going to cover everything together, which is quite all right. There are a bunch of sources here that if you would like on your own time, you can take a look at. Feel free to write to me, ask me questions about them. I'd love to discuss. But I'll pick out a few that I found that I find interesting, and that I think you'll find interesting too. So first, we have to look at this Tosfos together here on page 6, which is commenting right directly on that Gemara and Shabbos that we saw together. And Tosfos says as follows: Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, "Dizchus avos tama. Yes, the merit of the forefathers has ended. That's used up. Aval bris avos lo tama. But the covenant with the forefathers, that hasn't ended. That's still around." And as proof, Tosfos cite the pasuk from Vayikra that we saw together, right? That even after the Jews have been dispersed and are in exile, God says, "I will still recall the breed, the covenant that I made with the forefathers." So that's this is very interesting and very influential as a view. Finds Zechus Avos is gone. Okay, so it seems like then we can't appeal to the merit and use the merit. If things will happen, will happen. If we want, you know, the nation to return to the land, if we want to rectify a situation of exiles, Zechus Avos is not something that we can appeal to. But Brit Avot, that's still around. The covenant with the forefathers is still around, which means, it seems fundamentally, God made a promise. And the promise was a promise of this land, and that still endures. Now, this is not an obvious take. First of all, you might think, is Brit Avot and Zechut Avot really so different? Specifically Rabbi Tam, is this really something that we can distinguish? It seems like that's quite similar. But it seems like at the very least what we see here is an attempt to retain the connection, which seems like a presupposition of a great deal of Jewish life and theology, right? That there is a special connection between the Jewish people and God, right? So that's the Brit Avot, and that endures even if we can't appeal any longer to Zechut Avot. Okay, that's Tosfot. Interestingly, we have a rather similar idea that comes up in Rashi, but we'll get there in a moment. First, the Ramban at the bottom of page 6. And the Ramban, I'll just point to for a moment. He has the following very striking line. Begalutenu ata, in our current exile, tamas chus avos, the merit of the forefathers has ended. It's been used up. Ve'ein lanu hatzalam yad ha'amim rak ba'agur shemo. At this point, we no longer have any way of being saved from the nations except via God's name. And he goes on to quote a couple of psukim where the language of leman shemi, on behalf of my name, God's name, is used. So the Ramban, who doesn't sound like he's interested in making fine distinctions between Zchut Avot and Brit Avot. He says, look, Zchut Avot is gone. That's like the strong, thrust of the Gemara and Shabbos that we saw in other sources. But there still is a possibility of being saved. However, it's no longer about the Avot. It's about God's name. And the Ramban will go on to make an interesting argument about how God's name, God's reputation, as it were, is bound up with the fate of the Jewish people who actualize God's commandments and God's will in the world. Okay, that's the Ramban. We're going to do a bit of a bird's eye view in these last few minutes because I just want to give you all a sense of the sheer range of approaches to this question. So Rashi is interesting here. Rashi comments on Shmot Lamed Gimel, which is God talking about how God is shortly going to present the 13 attributes of mercy, which Moshe and the Jewish people are presented, and which enable them to then to appeal to God's merciful side. We can just look together for a moment. This is the middle of page 7. Rashi there, v'karasi b'shem Hashem lefanecha, l'lamedcha, says Rashi, l'lamedcha seder bakashas rachamim af im tichle zechus avos, to teach you the order, the service of asking for mercy, even if zechut avot has been used up, even if there's no longer that merit of the forefathers. And so here it sounds like the approach to the end of Zchut Avot is as follows. Yes, Zchut Avot has been used up, but there are other ways that we know that we can get in touch with God and can fix our dire situation. In this case, we were taught how to appeal to God's attributes of mercy, and that enables us to overcome this problem of the end of Zchut Avot. So there's a chance for the connection to endure, even though that connection to the Avot, which seems so crucial back in the Psukim that we read together, has seemingly gone away. Okay, so we're gonna wrap up in just a couple of minutes. I know that we're supposed to end around the end. I know once we've hit an hour, I'll just say outside. Look, the range of sources here is really astounding. I brought a bunch of them. There are many more than one could look at. Rabbeinu Bachya is quite similar to what we saw up until now, but rather different and interesting. The tour in a halachic text tries to explain to us why is it that we in our prayers why do we mention v'zocher chasdei avot, God who remembers the good deeds of the forefathers, if it's ended, what happens? So the tour tries to address that. He says no, right? He actually agrees with the Ramban. He says that Laman Shemo, God will still do it. But this is where the shir would have gone if we had another 15, 20 minutes together. Where we would go now is we would look at a really interesting thrust in the views of Zchut Avot and like trying to make sense of that, which to a remarkable degree seem to naturalize the idea, because it's a hard idea. If you think about it, it's kind of, and this is how I think about it, and it's an interesting but difficult way of thinking about it. You know, where maybe many of us will be familiar with the idea of poked avon avot al banim, right, that we read in the Chumash that God remembers the sins of the fathers, and at least seemingly might punish children as a result. That's certainly its own troubling idea, right? But and namely because how can you be responsible for that which you didn't do? But the opposite is also true with regard to appealing to the merit of the fathers of Zechut Avot. Why would it be that just because the fathers, you know, did something, just because the ancestors did something, that means that you should benefit from that? Why should that be the case? And it's a hard question. There are different possible answers. But as a result of that difficulty, I think there are a lot of Makoros, including the Beis HaLevi, but also a whole bunch of others. I mean, this is really what's going on in the Maharal, who's very interested in this, and Rav Kook to his own degree. The basic idea there, and you know, they complicate it as they so wish, but the basic idea is Zechut Avot is something that we could speak of in a natural way as being manifest in the influence that parents have on their children. So if there's a great legacy, if there's some great story from which we're coming, and great characteristics and great midot, then that is going to positively affect the following generations of people. But if we don't have that, then there'll be some difficulty there. Anyways, I think that should do it for now. So just to very quickly recap, we opened with what seems to me at least as a tension in that starts in Akev and really is there in Sefer Devarim in general, namely the problem that on the one hand the Jewish people seem like they have a special status, they're an Am Kadosh, Am Nivchar, but on the other hand everything seems like it's so contingent, so conditional, it could all just go away in a heartbeat and it really seems like it's just about good behavior. So what's so special? What's so Kadosh? And so moving past the quick Spinozist answer, we said, well, if you look at the Psukim, it seems like there's a very like unique relationship going on here, which has to do with the Avot. You can call it Brit Avot, Zechut Avot. But then we have to figure out, okay, but how long does that last? What's its nature? What would it mean? And does it mean anything for us nowadays? Or do we simply have to appeal to either God's name or our own deeds? The rest remains to be explored. So thank you so much for paying attention tonight, everyone. And if there are questions, I'd love to address them.
Thank you very much. Okay, if anybody has any questions, please, Vavakasha. But I think you did answer the question that you are of Bechachma with the Rach B'Shanim. So thank you very much. And Hatzlacha Rabba, and you know, you're going to England and to Cambridge, and we look forward to learning with you in the future. Anybody have any questions? Comments? Okay, everybody wondering how much merit they have on their own and how much they can get from their parents and their ancestors and how much they got to earn on their own. Okay, tomorrow at 9:35, we're going to switch to 9:30 one of these weeks. Okay, but tomorrow 9:35, my shiur on the Siddur will be continuing with Ashrei. That's what we say all the time. Very, very fascinating, important tehillah. And Sunday, Rabbi Liebtag will be back, of course, beginning with continuing a series on Yirmiyahu. We will be announcing, should be going up the website soon. Please God, our Elul series will be starting Monday, August 29th. Rabbi Liebtag will finish Yirmiyahu on Rosh Chodesh Sunday, August 28th, and then Monday will start. We have, Baruch Hashem, we have so far 11 different series planned for Elul Zman, as I like to say, if I can say Elul Zman. And so we'll keep you posted, and we hope we'll be learning with you. And like I always say, and for those who are new, welcome, invite a friend, let them know. But that is coming. So we'll have basically 6 days a week, pretty much two shiurim, but you know, every day slightly different. But you'll get the schedule soon. Okay, we're just putting the fine touch and getting it posted on the website and all that other interesting stuff. Okay, if anybody has any questions, they can say last. Otherwise, I want to wish everybody well. Shabbat Shalom, and those we'll see tomorrow. And wish you then a Shabbat Shalom, and everybody be well and enjoy the days in August. You know, the days get shorter very quickly in August. Summer comes to a brief end. And for those who are in the school mode, school starting in 2.5 weeks. I think in some parts of the States it started already. It's only here in the East Coast they wait till after Labor Day, I think, in much of the other place. Anyways, good night, everybody. Laila Tov.
Gelman, thank you so much for putting us in this. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming. This and that's okay. And thank you once again, Avi. I think your mom's on board. I'm not 100% sure, but
you can wait.
Okay. Okay. Getting nachas. That's why I just recognized the name before registration. I figured Siegel, though I don't know, you know, got to be connected. So, okay. Enjoy. Very nice. I think it's a beautiful thing. I had the scoot, the pleasure when I was a rabbi two blocks from where I lived, and my parents would come to hear me on Shabbat. There's a special schut to be able to teach Torah, and your parents can come and listen. So should merit that for many, many years. Okay, everybody. Laila Tov.
Laila Tov. Thank you, everyone.